Hey guys, DJ here. This is a disclaimer. Apply Materials is a 100% non-profit fan project set within the Orpheus Protocol game system. The Orpheus Protocol is an actual play podcast and tabletop role-playing game system created by Rob Stith and published by Varkalek Press. If you'd like to know more, please check out the podcast at www.orpheusprotocol.com and patreon.com/orpheusprotocol if you'd like to show more support for the main show. A link to the main show will be provided in the episode description down below. Thank you for your time, and please enjoy the following episode. Welcome to Applied Materials, an Orpheus Protocol actual play podcast. My name is DJ, and I will be your host for tonight. On the cast list for our journey into the unknown, Dave as Eugene Cardenas, Rasp as Rion Daniels, Vario as Ayesha Said, Leo as Jacob Otrinson, Jenna as Annie Sullivan. Tonight's episode, Snatch and Grab, Part 4. Snatch and Grab contains violence, implied threats of violence against children, weird coincidences, and a tread of a new path. Consider this your warning. Previously on Applied Materials, Eugene witnesses the kidnapping of a family and projects himself into the vehicle to memorize the faces within. Upon returning to the crime scene, however, he finds a massive bear about to terrorize the police officers there. Meanwhile, Annie chases down Zenith's squad, disabling their getaway vehicle by taking out its tire, but the van crashes, leaving the fates of its occupants unknown. What do you do?
Seeing that it's a cop, I think Ayesha makes direct eye contact with Rion and then starts to make a motion to definitely puts herself in front of the children. And then I start to make a motion like I'm putting my hands up.
Rion? Ayesha is putting her hands up. She looks like she's surrendering. What do you do?
I know what Jacob's gonna try. I need to neutralize that rifle.
Jacob, you hear the sound of metal tearing behind you, and as you're sort of collecting yourself, you look through the little window that separates the back of the van from the driver's section, and you see a pair of police boots on the asphalt. If you sort of crane your head downwards, you can see that the boots are connected to, well, just this wall of a woman. And your enhanced optics tell you that she, like yourself, is cybernetic.
That explains a few things. So he would be thinking of like the sacrifice play of like, you know, I'll hold them off, you guys go and get them out. So he probably would reach for the weapon.
Okay. Rion and Jacob, I would like the both of you to make me an athletics check with speed. To see who is faster. Will Rion be able to grab the gun from Jacob's hands first? Or will Jacob arm himself for the potential of combat?
So one on the dice, my speed value is 4, so that's a 5.
All right. I'm going to burn for the dead travel fast. So this is freaking important. All right. Oh, right. That doesn't give Rob bonuses anymore. Unfortunately, transformation is not instantaneous, so I can't pull that. I can pull every other string I got. Alright. Don't like that. Okay, that's much better. That's +2 on the dice. Okay, and I will pump free strain into that. That puts me at a 9. Excuse me. That was speed check. 8. It puts me 1 down.
Alright. Jacob. You're reaching for the AR-15 that has clattered from the passenger seat onto the floor ceiling. It was lying in a pile of broken glass next to you, and then it's not. Rion, how does this look? And where do you go after you've grabbed the rifle?
Rion lunges for it and just quick as a blink has dropped the mag, cycled the rifle, and slid it forward towards the officer. Day's done, Jacob.
Jacob, like, stares at Rion, like, not understanding for a second. Like, turning his head to the side.
Don't you get it? They fed us to this assignment. We weren't supposed to come back, Jacob.
There was nothing about this mission we could not have survived. You are choosing to fail this mission.
Choosing to preserve life, Jacob.
There's something you forgot in all of this.
What's that?
I draw my pistol, and I shoot Rion.
Double betrayal!
You thought I had one gun? Coward.
Yeah, no, as
oh, oh, God. Jacob, I'd like you to make me a ranged attack with your pistol skill and your ranged attack stat. Rion, I would like you to set me some sort of defense.
Mm-hmm.
Optical targeting works a little differently. It's now not a combined action. It's more a bonus you get, but you have to activate it in the initiative order. And we're not technically an initiative, so I won't give myself that bonus.
Much appreciated. Very gentlemanly of you for this sudden impromptu duel. All right. I'm going to pull my active roll. This brings me to a whopping 4.
Okay, minus 1 on the dice, so I'll replace that with an active reroll. Okay, taking 1, the roll is also bad. And with my ranged attack, that gets it to a 5.
So that is 1 degree of success you get on Rion. With 1 degree of success, that would be 5/4. You only get 1 shot off. Annie, within the blink of an eye, the man in the back of the van suddenly has an AR-15 in his hands, but it has been removed of its magazine, and you can see that the bolt is locked back, and there doesn't appear to be a round in the chamber. And that man that was in the back seat has just tossed this empty gun at your feet and raised his hands in a gesture of surrender, when the driver of the van sticks his hand through the broken window of the divider between the front and the back, armed with a pistol, and shot the surrendering man in the gut.
This whole thing's taken a turn. Okay, that's fine. You said he stuck his hand through the window? Like the window divider?
Yep.
Cool, that's my target. I have my own pistol.
Okay, so you're making a called shot against Jacob's arm. So roll me that ranged attack. Jacob, set me a defense.
This is probably evade, since it would be like, can I pull my arm back in time?
Yep.
So my evade is 4. Okay, I'll put a couple of physical strain into it. So that makes it a 6.
Annie, your called shot penalty is a -2.
Well, there goes my nice little +1 on the dice. Okay, that's fine. And then I've got my ranged attack. So that still puts me at just a 1. I'm honestly not too worried about making that shot. He just needs to know I'm willing to shoot him. So I will actually go ahead and take that.
Annie, you draw your sidearm and fire at the arm that is poking through the window. But Jacob, you are fast and you are also cybernetically enhanced. You hear her draw her gun, and quick as a blink, you pull your arm back through the window as a bullet glances off the metal of the floor ceiling. Rion, oh my god, everything hurts. Jacob just shot you.
It's real good I got that magical armor for being a werewolf.
Aisha, Jacob just shot Rion.
What the fuck? I mean, I kind of expected this. As soon as the betrayal happens, I think Aisha would rush to Rion's side to, like, support him and be like, Jacob, give it up. It's over.
We had like a communicator to talk to the handler when we first got this mission, right?
Yeah, you did. Roll me a luck check.
He's gonna tell Dad on us.
1 on the dice.
The screen's cracked, but the device itself appears to be functional.
Is there like an emergency code?
There is an emergency code that you can just sort of tap into to let your handler know that you are in some sort of distress and that the mission should be scrapped and or canceled due to your overwhelming failure and or capture by the enemy.
Yeah, I type in that code.
Aisha and Rion, you see him do this, and you hear the button presses as he taps in your emergency abandon code.
Is there any way for me to force projection, like, break the thing?
You can certainly try. I would allow you to make a force projection attack at the communicator.
That would be a called shot. I'm almost 100% sure.
That would be a called shot, yes.
All right, let's get it. Yes, I get to use my mental strain, which I still have 14 of. Okay, so we're not technically in combat yet. Oh, I already used my plus two. I'll use my reroll on discipline. Oh, for fuck's sake. It's the same fucking roll. Okay, that's minus one on the dice. I'm going to spend three strain to get that to a five. Minus two, I assume, right? Because it's...
Yep, minus two.
Yeah. Okay, so that's, yeah, that's only a three.
So you strike out with your mind, Aisha, and you are aiming for the little phone in Jacob's hand, but you are still reeling from the crash. And so your attack doesn't have enough force to knock it out of his hands or destroy it. Jacob, you can feel Aisha kind of impotently slap at your hands with her mind in an attempt to dislodge the phone from your fingers. But it is done. Your handler has received your emergency code, and he has texted back, received. Cleanup crew arriving in 20 minutes. Thank you for your service. And then the communicator sparks and fizzles in your hand as it destroys itself through some sort of failsafe embedded into the device. Aisha and Rion, both of your phones do this too.
Fuck.
Annie? These people seem to be having some sort of argument in the van. You don't quite know what's going on, but you know that you need to get Susan and Charlie and Kim out of here.
Definitely. There's still the matter of the driver, who is behind cover. But I feel like, at least I hope, that Sergeant Langley has my six. And so that's when I'm going to give the command for Max to step in. And Max can put space between these kidnappers and my charges, while I grab probably Charlie first, because these people have clearly surrendered and they don't have armed, or yeah, they're not armed, and clearly because they shoved a gun at me. Yeah, they're not armed, so with Charlie in my arms, I'm going to get him out, get him some fresh air, because honestly, it's only a matter of time before the engine in this thing blows, and I'm going to look at Kim and Susan, because they know me, they know my face. And kind of motion with my eyes to follow me out of there.
You don't even need to say anything. Susan immediately understands what you're doing as Max pads into the back of the van and situates himself between your charges and Aisha and Rion. The dog is growling at the man and the woman that you don't recognize as Susan gathers Kim in her arms, scrambles to her feet, and sort of hobbles out of the broken van. You're carrying Charlie in yours, and you can tell that he is in dire need of medical attention. You hazard a guess that the dude that got shot in here performed some life-saving medical procedures on Charlie to save his life. He is still injured and requires a hospital, at least. And so, using your body, you very carefully hold Charlie, being gentle not to nudge or accidentally shift any potential broken bones, and you step out of the wrecked vehicle. These two in the back of the van, they've surrendered, but what are you going to do about the driver?
With the driver, let's see. First, I'm going to shout at Sergeant Langley, Sergeant, where's that ambulance? And then hand Charlie off. I think I just need to like set him down on like a smoother patch of road, still on his side because he still needs to recover, and like leave him with Susan because that's her boy. Then I have to, let's see, I'm going to redraw my sidearm and do my little cop sidestep over to the driver's side, point at him, and I'm gonna see what kind of condition he's in, because he was still in a car crash too. I need to see if he's even able to still fight against me.
You call for Sergeant Langley to back you up, and he's there in a heartbeat. He was originally corralling some of the civilians away from the crash scene, no doubt brandishing police credentials and trying to get people just away so that they can go about their business. The moment he hears you call for him, he has his gun drawn and he has approached the back of the van and has situated himself next to Max, putting himself between your charges and the two surrendering people in the back of the van. And he is slowly but surely helping them get out of the wrecked vehicle before it, well, bursts into flames, leaving you with the task of confronting the driver. So you draw your sidearm and wander around to the front of the van. Jacob, as you're laying on the floor ceiling, you see that same pair of police boots tromp through the broken glass towards the driver's side of the vehicle. What do you do?
At this point, the mission seems irretrievable. Both other members of my team have gone rogue, and that is something that, like, there's not any sense in, like, trying to, like, go down swinging over. But he also is not inclined to surrender or be captured. So he is, you know, if she's going for, like, the right side of the car, Jacob's going to try and, like, shoulder slam his way out of the opposite side and just make a break for the wilderness off the side of the road, basically. I mean, wilderness, you know what I mean?
All right. I'd like you to make me a hybrid check between your athletics and your might using your vitality, because you are trying to first shoulder charge your way out of a wrecked vehicle and then just sprint away from this cop.
Okay, athletics is A, might is B, so that means it goes off as a B, right?
Yes.
That is a flat on the dice. I'll take my might reroll just in case it's better. One on the dice. Using vitality, that's a 5, and I'll spend a couple of physical strain to get that to a 7.
Annie, as you're wheeling around to the driver's side of the vehicle, there is a loud crash of metal as out flies this tall, broad man with short curly hair, just bull rush through the crumpled driver's side door. And before you can get a bead on him, he is sprinting at a high rate of speed away from you and into the Utah desert. Your enhanced optical systems lock onto your target, and they let you know that he's also part robot, like you are.
Here's the thing, though. I hold no kinship for other cyborgs. But here's the thing. I'm a cop. I'm not going to straight shoot him.
I will allow you to do one thing before you lose Jacob completely, because he is sprinting faster than a normal human can go.
I'm going to whistle for Max, and he's going to take him down. You're faster than a human. Are you faster than a police dog?
I will, before you finally make this decision, please be aware that Jacob will have no compunction about shooting the dog, so...
Understood. Max is a cop. He's in the line of duty. We understand. So I can still, like, shoot him. If he shoots my dog, I can shoot him. And that's how it's going to be.
Okay, well, I'd like you to make me an athletics check with speed using Max.
Okay.
Fuck it. Balls to the wall. Let's run this shit into the ground. I would like you to make me a charge attack with Max.
All right. I hate when things cancel out. All right, plus 1 on the die. And you said he's got a 3. Let's see, but he's also S tier. He's just the goodest boy, and he just wants to do right by me. And it's so sweet to see. All right, so with that plus 1 on the dice and his 3, so that brings him to a 4, and he will absolutely spend the strain. Oh, he's such a good boy. Let's bump that 4 to a 7.
With your athletics check of 7, Max is just so fast. He is the fastest boy now. He's just blitzing towards Jacob.
Dice, don't fail me now. They failed me. Minus 1. Okay. So we got the minus 1, but he's got a melee attack of 3, and he's already got the imposed, so he still has 1 left in the positives. And see, he still has the physical strain to spend, because he's S tier in everything, because he's just the goodest boy. Okay, and he spent 3 the last time, so he still has 9 strain to spend. So we're gonna bump that 1, bring it to a 4.
Jacob, I would like you to set me some sort of melee defense against a 4.
I guess evade, which is a 4, and I have field experience.
So you automatically win ties, which means you are able to successfully dodge this charge attack. So what happens is, Jacob, you're sprinting through the desert, and you hear behind you 2 pairs of claws digging into dirt as a police dog, you assume, is running after you at full tilt. And then you hear its paws leave the ground, and there is that sound of just jaws chomping together real hard, but they bite onto a tiny scrap of your pant leg, which tears. And the dog tumbles into the dirt, rolls over a couple of times, as you make your escape into the Utah desert. By the time the dog gets back up and is prepared to chase again, you are long gone. Annie, you watch as that man runs off into the distance, Max having tried and failed to catch your quarry. The big German Shepherd trots back towards you. He's still looking up at you, happy, like, did I do good? Did I do good? But you can see that his thick fur is covered in a layer of dust.
He is a good boy, so I must give him pats. I don't care if I'm in the middle of an arrest.
It's true. Hims did his best.
He did his best. However, I'm probably going to note that pant leg piece in his mouth. Yes?
You see a small scrap of what looks like digital urban camoed cotton caught in Max's teeth.
With that in mind, I'm going to see that, pull an evidence bag from probably one of my cargo pockets, drop that in, pocket it for later, and then I'm going to work on evacuation efforts to get away from the van, because that thing's going to explode at any minute now.
As you make your way back towards the crash site, you can see that Samuel has pulled the man and the woman from the wreckage and scooted everybody back towards where your car is, so that in the event of the van exploding, no one's going to get hit by shrapnel or fire or anything of the sort.
Okay, this is good. This is good. He's keeping a control on the situation. I'm going to go check on the man who got shot.
Rion, you are bleeding, or at the very least, you've sprung a leak.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, it's not life-threatening, but it doesn't take the zip out, you know?
And so you're sitting with your back resting against the side of this police car, as the female cop from before, she strides up to you and appears to assess your wound.
While she's doing that, Aisha would know that when the communicator, like, destroyed itself, that means we got the cleanup crew coming in, correct?
You know that a Black Steel Industries cleanup crew is meant to sanitize the area, clean all witnesses, leave nothing standing. And that means everybody in this group, you, Rion, Susan, her children, the two cops, Jacob, if you don't do something, anything, you are all going to die.
While she's checking the wounds, Aisha's going to be like, we have hostiles incoming. I'm not sure exactly when, but they are coming for us and they are going to take us all out. So we need to be prepared to defend ourselves, and we need to leave the situation as soon as possible to avoid mass casualties.
I mean, the mention of mass casualties is bound to get anyone's attention.
Sergeant Langley, he looks up from being on his phone and looks at Aisha, and he glances at you, Annie, and he sort of mouths, is she being serious to you?
Annie has just kneeled down in front of this man, and then, again, unnatural eye flick over to the woman, and then very low, what do you mean by that, mass casualties?
We don't work for good folk.
There's paramilitary cleanup crew inbound.
And then Annie's going to look confused for a second, just eyebrows knitted together. What do you mean there's a crew coming? And then something clicks, and she needs to test a theory. And she's going to very quietly look at the man. How is there someone coming when the Pantheon is down?
Rion, you don't understand this. Whatever Pantheon down means, it means something completely unrelated to whatever police work this woman does. But you were briefed on your opponents and your enemies for the upcoming couple of months before you were sent on this assignment. The enigmatic Orpheus organization, a shadowy cabal of secret agents, spies, occultists, and other specialists that work in the shadows to protect the United States of America from gross unnatural harm, be it by cultists, by eldritch beings, by supernatural monsters, whatever happens in the United States that can't be explained by scientific means, that's their wheelhouse. You don't quite put the two and two together, but if you had a guess, you would probably say that this woman is or was an Orpheus agent, with her strange use of weird code language.
Yeah, yeah, I know a call when I hear it, but we're the competitors.
Oh, this changes a lot.
We just have this thing about you know, potential violence to children. Those two fellow officers weren't us. That was Jacob going wild. It's been a bad day at the office, but we need to move, and soon. I don't know about you, but I'm not exactly fighting fit right now.
Certainly not.
Sergeant Langley approaches you, Annie, and he taps you on your shoulder, and he says, Annie, as much as we can stay here and talk shop about whatever the fuck is going on, I just got a call from the officers back at your house. They say some strange man with a bow just fought off that huge-ass fucking bear that's been terrorizing our town. I think he killed it.
Let's be real here. Annie ain't thinking about the bear anymore.
But whatever it is, we need to get these people back to Beaver. And we need to get Charlie here to a hospital. Stat, your car is enough room, right?
It'll have to.
If not, I can wait here for another squad car.
Look, worst case scenario, send me with the kid. I can help the EMTs. I'm a medic, amongst other things. And I'm a little more capable than I look. That way you have eyes on the boy, and you don't have to split forces or worry about somebody not being with him.
I'm going to stand back up and approach Sergeant Langley, and I'm going to fill him in on my plan. I am going to take the man and Charlie to the hospital. We don't have time to wait for an ambulance. Everyone else, I'm leaving here with you and Max.
Samuel nods, and he says, all right, I'll call up the road to see if one of the fine folks over in Fillmore can let me borrow their car to get the rest of these, well, I don't even know anymore, the rest of these people back over to Beaver. I'll meet you there. I'll meet you at your house.
That sounds like a plan, sir. And then she's going to walk back, and she's going to, honestly, probably more gently than expected, help the man up, because I imagine he's cuffed by now, because I know Sergeant Langley, and he would have cuffed him despite him bleeding. Going to help the cuffed man into the back of my police car and go to Susan and let her know what I'm doing with Charlie, because he needs help and he needs it now.
Susan nods as you approach her and you tell her of your plan, and she says, you didn't see it, but that man saved my boy's life. I owe him that much. And even though he tried to kidnap us, he was, well, polite about it, I think. And he didn't try to hurt us. So if he saved the life of my son, I can trust him to take care of Charlie. Just get him back to Beaver safely, please.
I'll be sure to do that. But be sure to keep all of this in mind for your testimony in court. Perhaps he can get off easy. And then she'll take Charlie and then also put him into the back with this other man. And she's going to get into her car. A bit of an empty spot in her heart because she has to leave Max behind, but it's okay. It's for the greater good.
Ironically, she does have another good boy, but she doesn't have
My goodness. All right. And then with that, she's going to drive back onto the highway and just put the sirens on. She's booking it.
All right. Rion, you're sitting in the backseat of this woman's police car next to the unconscious form of the boy whose life you just saved. The boy that you took a bullet for. The sirens fade into the distance, Aisha, as you watch this policewoman bundle Rion and the child into her car and speed away back towards Beaver. The kid's mother looks at you and she says, so what's going to happen now?
First of all, I assume, was it just a communicator, or does all of our armor have some sort of tracking stuff? Because we got to take that shit off.
It's your communicator.
Okay, cool. So that's already broken, so that they can't track that, or at least we leave it on the ground if it's not already destroyed. So Aisha will turn to Susan and be like, well, now I hope the Beaver PD is able to protect us from other people, like the man who took us in the car, because there's another group coming in and they're looking to take us all out. So let's hope we're in good hands. And she looks up at the officer deliberately at this.
You can see the officer with the cowboy hat sort of tip his hat at you. And he says, don't worry. If you're who I think you are and you're working for who I think you are, we're going to have a big fight on our hands, but whatever is going to happen, well, it's going to happen. And for once, I'm glad we both see eye to eye on that issue. I'm going to wait for that police car to get back here. We're all going to go back to Beaver. And we're going to make sure that the assholes who are coming to clean up, like you said, don't even set foot in Beaver. I like my town. This place is my home. And I think I'd like to die protecting it. I would like you to start off by rolling for initiative.
Sounds fantastic. Oh no, I rolled poorly. Oh boy, oh man. Oh no, even worse, I'm at an 8.
You don't see the bear. You don't know where it is. But you can smell it, you can sense it. The bow definitely can sense it. It is quivering in your hand. And you can feel the floor underneath you start to rumble and shake with its weight. You had only seen the bear in your astral form the previous night, and so nothing has quite prepared you for just how huge this thing is in person. You cast your gaze to the empty yard space between two of these houses, where one of these police cars is parked, and you see it. It is huge, bigger than what you thought you saw in your astral form. It stands on all four of its legs, and its back almost goes up to the roof of one of these single-story flat suburban homes.
Oh my god.
It is gigundous. And its most striking feature, obviously, are the pair of golden, blazing yellow eyes that you can see peering out from its jet black fur. As you're sort of hiding in one of these bushes, just observing, you notice that the police officers on the street who have been questioning witnesses, gathering evidence, and also preparing the bodies of their fallen to be taken to the local hospital / morgue for autopsy, they all feel the rumbling in the floor like you do, and they are all heads on a swivel, looking around, trying to figure out where this strange vibration is coming from. And then one of them sees the bear, yells at the bear, and then pulls his sidearm and just sort of backs away from the bear while yelling at his companions to look at the threat incoming, and oh my god, it's huge. So there are four police officers present in the scene. Two of them are near the bear, backing away from it. Two of them are further away, positioned on the porches of nearby houses. None of them have opened fire, but they are all guns drawn, staring at the bear, wondering what to do.
My base initiative is a 9.
Ooh, you go first.
So I'm thinking, normally Eugene would have waited for this. This is not because, again, you know, he was dealing with the sort of the concept of honorable combat, but he also wants to get these police officers out of the scene as quickly as possible. And it would be very difficult to do that if he were, you know, if he were just a kid with a bow telling them to leave. It might be easier for him to do that in his astral form. And so he is going to quickly spend the initiative, even though he knows this is going to knock him down. This is going to take him a while to get himself in the right headspace to do this. He knows that the quickest way to save these people's lives is to appear to them in his astral form. So I'm going to use the overload of astral projection.
All right. So you're going to spend the 5 humanity. Which rank of your astral projection are you going to use?
Oh, yeah. Wait. This doesn't cost initiative, does it?
No.
Oh, wow. Oh, that, I think, I don't know if that's different or not. So I'm using rank 2.
So there are two officers in front of the bear,
mm-hmm.
and then sort of two officers off to either side of the bear. One is standing on the porch of a nearby house to your right, and the other is on the street just exiting the house that got broken into.
All right. I appear behind the two officers that are in front of the bear and just say quickly, in the deepest voice I can muster, "This is my fight. You don't want to be part of this."
Okay, you spend the 5 humanity to do this. I'm going to have to roll horror checks for all of these officers. Even though it's not part of the ability, but seeing a sudden appearance of basically a ghost in front of like this giant, probably 8-9 foot tall bear is bound to elicit some form of horror check in the untrained civilian. So I'm going to quickly roll for all four of these people.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, that one is fine. You know what?
Yeah?
These are all police officers. They don't give a shit.
I should have thought about this.
So As you manifest your astral form in front of the bear facing the two police officers that are in front of it, you can see that now these officers, it's a man and a woman. They both appear to be dressed very normally, your typical brown uniform, khaki slacks. They are both holding handguns pointed at this bear. And the moment they see you, they exchange a look like, "You seeing this? No, really, are you seeing this?" And then they both look at you, look at the bear, look at you, and then they look at the bear, and then they just start backing up away from you and the bear while one of them keys their radio on their shoulder. You can't quite tell what he is saying, but you think he's probably asking for backup.
Mm-hmm.
The bear sees you appear in front of it. It is startled and lets out a surprised little grunt, having suddenly been blinded by your radiance. And you can hear it say,
"You interrupt me to feed. How dare."
And it swipes at you.
Exciting. All right.
Make me a melee defense.
You got it. I'm going to... My evade's a 4 and my dodge... What's my dodge? My dodge is only a 2, so I can't do an active roll, but I can pump in 3 physical strain. So I'm going to bring that up to a 7. Oh, that's not going to be enough.
You say it's not going to be enough, but I rolled like ass. So you brace yourself thinking that this claw swipe is going to basically cleave you in half. And then its claws just sort of harmlessly pass through your astral form because you are an astral ghost and you're not exactly there physically. It does this and then it looks at its paw like very confused. Like, what happened? I thought this guy was supposed to be dead and you're just sort of floating there in the air still. And now it's your turn again.
Can I, without spending initiative, can I make a, can I do a one-liner?
Yeah, talking's a free action.
Respond to the, "You interrupted my chance to feed." I think I just respond, "I let you set the battlefield. This is on you." And I knock an arrow. Normally I'd aim for one initiative, but I'm not sure I'm going to get another chance. So I'm just going to take the I'm just going to take the aim penalty and I'm just going to fire an arrow in this thing's goddamn face.
All right, make me a ranged attack.
Obviously activating Strike Two Worlds to be able to use my bow in my astral form. I will make you a ranged attack check. That's a flat on the dice. I'm going to take my reroll because this seems important. That's worse, so I'm sticking with the flat on the dice, putting in the 3 temp strain to bring that up to a 7 again.
I have to defend this in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to spend a strain to break the tie?
I thought you'd never ask. I would love to.
All right, your attack goes through with no degrees of success. Okay, so like, describe to me, like, what do the arrows on the bow look like? Are they just bolts of light, or are they like actual arrows?
I hadn't thought about this. I actually do really like the idea that they're just bolts of light. Yeah, I think they're bolts of light that like materialize instantly as the bow is drawn.
And so the bear is taking 6 damage.
Oh, yes. I also, however, just to be clear, I'm also going, because I used Strike Two Worlds on this, because I had to use a bow in my astral form, I have both masteries on that. So what that allows me to do is Mastery A, I will use, first off, 1 spiritual strain so I don't have to keep using the ability. But Mastery B, and I have rank 3 of it. So I am ignoring half of its armor, if it had any armor, based on its big bulky fur. And I am able to spend 1 spiritual strain to reduce the victim's armor and damage reduction by half until the end of the round. Oh, never mind. So between Mastery B and rank 3, I have removed all of its armor and damage reduction. It can still strain down stuff, but it has no armor. It's a bear. It might not have armor, but it seemed worthwhile.
Okay, well, I will spend some strain to not take any damage. The bright gold arrow that you draw on this bow, made of pure energy, it strikes the flesh of this bear and it sinks quite deep into it, but it's a giant bear and it's very big. And so as the arrow fizzles out and disappears, leaving behind a hole from which blood starts to pour, it doesn't appear to affect the bear all that much as the arrow fizzles out of existence, leaving behind a golf ball sized hole that starts to leak blood. It looks at you and snarls. And now it's the police's turn.
No, I tried to save them.
So the two officers behind you, having seen the bear attempt to swipe at you and fail rather miserably, They are going to continue backing up until they are behind their squad cars in the street. Their guns are still trained on the bear, and the one that is radioing for backup has finished his call and is now keeping you covered behind his squad car. But they are all just watching you right now. They are all just watching you fight. They are all going to take 3 ticks of aim each. Okay, it's the bear's turn. So, the bear, it's angry, and it's going to charge you.
Yeah, that's understandable.
So set me a melee defense.
You got it. I'm going to do the same thing and hope that I still continue to not die. I'm running a little low on physical strain, but I'll be okay. So that brings me up to a 7 again.
Would you like to spend a strain to break the tie?
You're kidding. Absolutely, I'd love to. Yep, I am down to 1 physical strain, but I've evaded its attack once more.
So what happens is you can see it start to bull rush you. It is just leaping from a standing start and is trying to bite you in half. But you deftly float out of the way, and instead of barreling into you and knocking you over, it instead just sort of lumbers out onto the street, and being unable to stop its huge bulk very effectively, it instead barrels into one of the squad cars where one of the police officers is hiding behind, knocking the police car several feet across the street and flooring the guy that was behind it.
Well, as long as it didn't crush him.
It is your turn again.
I am going to take this opportunity to use a tick of aim.
All right, you take 1 tick of aim. It's everybody's turn. So you go first, because you have the highest initiative base.
No, I'm not going to go for a called shot yet. But feeling I am very low on physical strain. So what I'm going to do is I am going to fire another arrow. And I'm going to invoke my bond to the bow itself. And so I'll add, I believe, a D3 to this roll. So let me roll my attack. All right. That's a flat on the dice, a 4, and I will roll a D3. Hold on. That's a full 3. I put in my last physical strain. That brings my attack up to an 8, plus whatever bonus I got from aiming.
Which was 1 tick of aim, so that's a 9. So you get 2 degrees of success on this thing.
Yes!
Dealing 8 damage with your bow and arrow.
Mm-hmm. And it gets no reduction and no armor. Oh, and I would also, while it is still my turn, I don't know if this is going to help anything, but I would also like to gain 1 level of sympathetic field. Don't know if that'll help, but it's nice to have.
Okay, so it's going to attempt to strain down some of this damage. So you take aim, and as you fire off the second arrow, the projectile sinks into, well, the flesh on its butt. And this time, with your careful aim and a bit more preparation time, the blazing gold arrow digs deep into the flesh of the flank of this gigantic black bear, and it snarls as it rears its head back at you. You can see it's very, very pissed. Now it is the bear's turn. So the bear is going to wheel around, its body just knocking the other squad car out of the way as it turns to face you, not happy at all with how its initial attack missed twice. And so now it's going to try and come back at you and do the same thing over again and try and swipe at you.
Okay, I am out of physical strain, so that would just be a 4. But I'm trying to decide if I want to use a motivation just because I've been being saved by the skin of my teeth lately. I think I'm going to use another motivation. I am using my principle of none of this matters as I allow myself just to sink into the dream. And hopefully that makes me less present. So I'm going to, if that's all right with you, roll another D3.
Go ahead.
That's a 2, bringing my defense up to a 6.
Ooh, this one, not so lucky. Mm-hmm. 1 degree of failure.
No!
So you're taking 10 damage as it swings this giant meaty paw at you.
Hey, DJ?
Uh-huh.
I am so sorry. No, I'm not sorry. Why am I saying I'm sorry?
Why are you apologizing?
Because I'm not actually going to take that damage. Because I'm in astral projection overload. I check discipline with focus versus the amount of damage I would have taken. And if I fail, it disrupts my use of the ability. But if I succeed, nothing happens.
Go ahead and make me that discipline with focus check.
Absolutely. Come on, good rolls. That's a bad roll. I'm taking my reroll. That's an okay roll. So that is a flat on the dice. So I'm not making out of this unscathed. My focus is a 4. So that's a 4. And of course, I'm going to put the 3 mental strain that I can into that. I just remember. No, the thing I was remembering, I can also use mental strain on ranged attacks, can't I?
Yeah, you can.
Sweet. I will remember that for future use. That brings me up to a 7, and I'm trying to beat a 10. Oh, God. I have one shot. No, I'm not going to. I'm just going to take the hit. I'm not going to use my last motivation on this. If I need that, I'll use it.
Okay, so that's 3 degrees of failure. So you need to spend either 3 humanity or 3 mental strain or a combination of both to continue using this ability, or you need to end it.
I am going to maintain use of the ability. I'll be honest. I should, from a mechanical standpoint, just spend humanity. It seems more interesting to spend strain. No, I'll spend 1 humanity and 2 mental strain. Just because it seems more interesting to me to be lower on strain in this combat. That sounds worse. You know, no, I'm going to stop trying to metagame. I'm going to take it all on humanity because I'm trying to survive this.
All right, you take the hit. The bear's paw just slams into your side and you feel it in your body, not just in your soul. This hurts. And there is a part of you that is very concerned as to how the bear has suddenly learned how to hit a spirit. And now it's the police's turn. The police have all taken 3 ticks of aim each, and so now they're all going to fire their guns at it. Okay, well, I have rolled up the attacks and rolled up the damage, and suffice it to say, the bear is not looking too good. As from behind you, you hear this staccato burst of semi-automatic gunfire as the cops open up on the bear. And even though the bear is big and tough and strong, 9mm bullets are, well, painful, even to animals. And so you watch as the bullets fly towards you and into the backside of this bear because it's facing you. They are just these puffs of red mist and black fur as bullets sink into the flanks and the sides of the great black bear. It roars in pain and agony. And as this volley of gunfire dies down, it's still standing, surprisingly. But it doesn't appear to be looking too good. And now it's your turn again.
I think I'm just going to knock another arrow. And I'm going to look it in the eye while I'm doing it. Not taking a tick of aim, because it's already in melee. And I'm not sure what will happen the next time I get hit. And I'm going to fire.
Okay, do it. Make me that ranged attack.
Now that I remember I can use mental strain on this is going to be... Okay. Oh, but I've totally forgotten. I can spend a strain to ignore negatives. That is going to be a +1 on the dice. And I'm going to put 3 mental strain in to bring that up to a 9.
So that is 3 degrees of success you get on it. You're doing 9 damage with an arrow. I want you to describe to me the way this fight ends.
I think as Eugene draws back the arrow, crackling with light, he catches the bear's eye one last time. And I think he is almost apologetic because he's sad that the police interfered with what was supposed to be so honorable a battle. But I think remembering that bear had intended to feed on them, he just says a quick thing of, "Who am I to interfere with the revenge of prey?" As he looses an arrow that flies straight into the glowing golden eye of the bear, as gold meets gold, and the bear rears back its mighty head, pointing straight into the sky, its arms hanging loose, and it flops onto its back as the arrow dissipates.
The bear lets out a roar of agony as the arrow sinks into its skull. It rears back on its hind legs, and this thing is just so massive. It's like a titan, almost. And when it falls over onto its back in the middle of the street, it shakes every single car within a few feet of it. And you can see glass begin to splinter and shatter on the front porches of some of the houses nearby with just how heavy and big this thing was. And something strange happens. As you return to your body and emerge from the bush, bow still in hand, The bear starts to shrink and slowly but surely turn into a way smaller black fur covered lump in the street. As you approach the scene in your physical form, one of the cops sees you, makes the connection between you, that weird golden man that he saw with the bow and everything. Doesn't say anything, but the cop instead goes over to peer at this lump of black fur. His gun is still drawn, points it at the thing. You know, you can't be too careful. And as he pokes it with the barrel of his gun, doesn't make a sound, doesn't move, he reaches over to kind of lift up the fur to try and maybe carry it or something, or see what it is. You see that the fur covering the lump is actually not fur at all, but it is like a blanket or some sort of animal skin covered in fur. And underneath that is a man.
What? Is he at all recognizable?
Nope, completely unrecognizable. This is someone you've never seen before. This appears to be some middle-aged, kind of old man, probably late 40s, early 50s. And I would like you to make me an investigation check with your cognition, please, just to see if you notice anything amiss about this guy.
I would love to. So I have a 3 in investigation. I don't need to take a reroll. I got a +2 dice. Finally, I'm rolling well. +3 temp strain, that brings that up to a 9.
So your cursory glance at this man as the trooper sort of peers rather confusedly at why is there a man underneath all this fur, is that his face appears to be covered in some sort of paint. And it's not just like the guy slapped his face with a hand covered in paint. It's more like a very distinct pattern has been drawn on his face. Very tribal in nature, almost ceremonial. From your time with the bow, you know that the bow has told you of other civilizations and races who have hunted as not just ceremony, but for the continuation of their tribe. And the bow recognizes this face painting pattern as Native American. You're not quite sure what tribe it is from. Neither are you sure if this man is even Native American at all.
You got a fair point there.
But this is what the bow is telling you, that these face painting patterns come from Native American tribes. But the bow doesn't know. It's not specific enough with its knowledge to know exactly what tribe and to know what this creature is.
Oh, that's strange. I turn to the cop who didn't say anything upon noticing me, but was seemed you know, okay with me. I just say, is this guy a local? Seems like weird things are happening around here.
The cop shakes his head and he says, oh, if he were a local, we would have recognized him. This town's so small. You know, everybody knows everybody. This guy must be from out of town. Look, not to make jokes or anything, but like earlier, the floaty dude, that was you, wasn't it?
Oh gosh. You know what? I think I gotta go with this. Eugene cocks his head, says, floaty dude? And I'd like to make a deception check, even though I don't have the deception skill.
Okay, sure. Make me a deception check with your charisma, please.
Oh, God. Oh, this is going to be funny. That is a -1 on the dice. I did not successfully lie to this guy.
Yeah, no, this cop doesn't take your shit for a moment. He looks at you, sort of squints, glares a little, and he says, come on now, kid. That was you, wasn't it?
I'm surprised you're not more shocked. I mean, I'm pretty shocked just to see this guy was a dude in a... I don't even want to get into it.
Well, I mean, first was the guy in our police department who turned out to be a serial killer 3 years in the making. Now this? I don't know, man. I think I need to take a day off.
You don't have to worry about me. I'm just passing through. I'm not going to cause any trouble for you. Unless you got any other, you know, monsters need taken care of.
No, I don't think so. I don't think this town has any more monsters. Not anymore. At least, what do I know? I'm a cop. I'll just pretend like you helped us take down a really big grizzly bear that was in this area. We're gonna pretend that the guy underneath the fur didn't exist. And he sort of gives you that knowing look like, go with it or else jail.
Eugene just raises his hand and points to the bow strung across his back. Just a passing hunter. Happened to help out.
Yeah, just a passing hunter here to help out. I'll radio this in to the sergeant. He'll know how to make heads or tails of this. I'm not paid enough for this shit. I just want to clean up this crime scene and go home.
Oh, speaking of crime scenes, what the hell happened earlier?
According to the police sergeant that was here earlier, there were a bunch of PMCs that broke into the house behind you, and they kidnapped a mother and her children. But I just got word from my sergeant. The kidnappers surrendered. Well, two of them surrendered, one of them ran away. The mom and her kids are safe, I do believe, and they are on their way back to Beaver right now. The kid does need to go to the hospital, though. That's what I heard, so... we should have EMS up here soon. They told us to meet them at the hospital, I think, so we're going to go and do that. I've got a lot of reports to write. This is going to be a long day. For what it's worth, thanks for the help. Let's never speak of this again, and hopefully I'll never have to see you again.
Eugene nods and says, I'd ask your name, but I don't think we should know anything about each other. And Eugene sets off back towards the motel.
All right. You return to the motel. It is just past noon now, and you're starting to feel a little peckish. And you put your hunting gear back into your hotel room. The bow is very satisfied with the hunt. The spirit within is ecstatic that such a hunt was to be found here in this quiet little town. And not only did you find a worthy hunt, you succeeded. You got your prey. And it is very satisfied and very happy.
Eugene chuckles a little bit and sort of says to the bow, not expecting a response, you weren't sure? Eugene laughs, tucks the bow away and says, don't you worry, I'm just going to grab a bite. Eugene heads downstairs and weaves to Doreen. It has been a... crazy morning, but just let you know, your bear problem's taken care of.
She puts a hand to her chest and she says, oh, really? Did the police take care of it?
Absolutely. It was hunting in the middle of the day, but that all the more reason it had to be put down. It's all taken care of. I saw it myself. Bit of a crazy experience, though.
She looks a little sad as you say that it had to be put down, and she says, oh, well, that's a shame. I mean... I'm sure it must have been just hungry, right?
There's a moment, sort of a pang flits across Eugene's eyes, and he says, yeah, but that's nature, right? You know, for its prey, who are we to try to, well, mess with nature? Even if it's a predator, we gotta defend ourselves.
Yeah, I suppose so. Well, that makes me feel a little bit safer, I guess.
Speaking of being hungry, I am starving. Can I ask where's a good place in town to get a bite? I don't think I can eat any more jerky.
Oh, well, there's a cafe downtown that serves these great lobsters and oysters. They've got good lobster rolls, got fries and everything. I like to go down there every month just to have a bite. It's a nice little cafe. Big, big red sign. You won't miss it.
Thank you very much. And I have to say, Doreen, thank you for making this little trip here so wonderful. You know, it's actually even better than the ski trip I had planned.
Sure. Yeah, it was. Thank you for helping us out, I guess, and for coming to visit our quaint little town.
Of course, Doreen. It's been a dream. And with that, Eugene heads out the door to grab some lunch.
As you step out the door and find your god-awful rental to go and drive to the center of town to find a bite to eat, you feel your phone buzz in your pocket.
I reach in and I check it.
It is an unknown number, unlisted.
This is weird. It doesn't... I mean, if it was a telemarketer, it'd say telemarketer. Eugene will answer it.
Hello? Am I speaking to... what's your name? Eugene, is it?
Eugene Cardenas, yeah.
Yeah, this is Beaver County Sheriff's Department Sergeant Samuel Langley. I need you to come down to the station for a moment. We have something I need to discuss with you, and it involves what you found outside of that house you were at.
Eugene sighs. Sounds good, Sheriff Langley. Any chance you guys get delivery? I'm starving.
This has been Applied Materials, an Orpheus Protocol actual play podcast. A warm thanks to our players tonight. Dave for playing Eugene, Leo for playing Jacob, Rasp for playing Rion,
Vario for playing Aisha, Jenna for playing Annie. Be sure to follow the show at Applied Mats on Twitter, and we will return in the next episode. Good night. Four unlikely allies come together to defend a town that has no idea of the threat it faces. Extinction or salvation in the hands of the few. Next time on Snatch and Grab, Part 5.